Hello, my name is Arun. I host Navrang Wealth every Saturday 11 a.m. to 12 noon on CFRU 93.3 FM. Each week we bring Bollywood music in Hindi and Punjabi, South Asian masala and gup shop, and much more. So keep listening Navrang Wealth every Saturday.
I love my India. I love my India.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Mattina mi sono svegliato,
oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao.
Una mattina mi sono svegliato e ho trovato l'invaso. Oh partigiano, portami via,
oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao.
Partigiano, portami via, perché mi sento di morire. E se io muoio da partigiano,
oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao.
E tu mi devi seppellire, seppellire lassù in montagna,
oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao.
Seppellire lassù in montagna e sotto l'ombra di un bel fiore. Passeranno,
oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao.
E le genti che passeranno e mi diranno che bel fiore. E questo è il fiore del partigiano,
oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao.
E questo è il fiore del partigiano, è morto per la libertà.
E questo è il fiore
del partigiano, è morto per la libertà.
Faccio vedere una cosa.
Fammi vedere.
Sulle mani, su bella ciao! Siete bellissimi, siete bellissimi.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried Berezov, and that, of course, was the iconic Italian partisan song Bella Ciao from the Second World War. And the reason why I decided to play that tonight is, of course, tonight we are celebrating the victory over fascism that happened on May 9th, 1945, the defeat of Nazi Germany. And the people who made that happen. Who made that victory possible. And it's more than that, because comrades, this week I would like to commemorate two anniversaries that should be remembered by all of progressive humanity as victories of the people against the barbaric onslaught of imperialism. So on this day, May 9th, 1945, Nazi Germany, its capital, Berlin, overrun by the same Soviet army and people that the Nazis had condemned as subhuman, fit only for slavery and extermination. Nazi Germany capitulated. And its reign of terror that had claimed the lives of countless millions finally was brought to an end. On April 30th, 1975, the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese armies overran Saigon, bringing down the American-backed puppet government in that country, upon whose behalf America had supposedly waged one of the bloodiest imperialist wars in modern history against the people of Southeast Asia, killing more than 3 million Vietnamese over a 10-year period. But on April 30th, 1975, the last American troops were expelled by force from Vietnam. Yet another victory for the people. Both of these pivotal victories over imperialism go officially unrecognized in this country and throughout most of the Western world. With the 70th anniversary of the defeat of fascism in 1945 passing almost unmentioned in this country, except maybe as an occasion for some xenophobic remarks about the Russians and the unspecified threat, in quotation marks, that they supposedly pose to the peace and security of the free world. Once again, in quotations. Unsurprising, perhaps, that the West wants to keep quiet about fighting against the Nazis, seeing that they are now backing them in Ukraine and openly providing them with guns, equipment, money, and even hundreds of military personnel to train them in their genocidal struggle against those quote-unquote pro-Russian separatists who are supposedly so evil, according to the mainstream media, even though it is their cities, their homes, their families that are being bombed and shelled by the supposedly legitimate government in Ukraine that deploys fascist militias as its foot soldiers against its own people. And Canada's right in there providing troops for this travesty, this crime against humanity. No wonder there is no recognition of the fall of Saigon, the liberation of Saigon, and the liberation of Vietnam's and the anniversary of the 45th anniversary of Vietnam's liberation, given that the United States and its allies are still bombing Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, and other third world countries in the name of national security. The geographical locations may change, the specifics may change, but the crimes of imperialism are consistent. Just as the struggle of millions of people throughout the world for self-determination in the face of professional killers and high-tech weaponry is consistent as well. May Day likewise passes without official recognition throughout the Western world. And really, should we be surprised that governments currently imposing austerity, heartless cutbacks, you know, and increasingly brutal police actions on their citizens, along with blanket surveillance, would refuse to recognize the Universal Day of Working Class Solidarity and Mobilization? You know, is it any surprise that May 1st goes unrecognized by them? This time of year, with its many anniversaries, reminds us of the ongoing reality of class struggle, anti-imperialist resistance, and the importance of international solidarity. We are still fighting against the same monster that the Soviets defeated in 1945 and that the Vietnamese crushed in 1975. And we must keep fighting until imperialism, along with capitalist class exploitation, are erased from the face of the earth, and liberation for working people and self-determination for all the peoples of the world is the order of the day. And until then, brothers and sisters, we shall fight on. You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was the Red Army Choir with Sacred War, anti-fascist anthem of Soviet resistance against Nazi Germany in the Second World War. And of course, we're commemorating the 70th anniversary of the defeat of fascism in 1945. And I want to read to you right now the words that Fidel Castro wrote on this occasion, the 70th anniversary of the defeat of fascism in Europe in the Second World War. And this is what he had to say. He wrote this article for the Cuban newspaper Granma. And I think it's worth quoting in full, so I'm just going to read through it right now. The 70th anniversary of the Great Patriotic War will be commemorated the day after tomorrow, May 9th. Given the time difference, while I write these lines, the soldiers and officials of the Army of the Russian Federation, full of pride, will be parading through Moscow's Red Square with their characteristic quick military steps. Lenin was a brilliant revolutionary strategist who did not hesitate in assuming the ideas of Marx and implementing them in an immense and only partly industrialized country whose proletariat partly became the most radical and courageous on the planet in the wake of the greatest slaughter that capitalism had caused in the world, where for the first time tanks, automatic weapons, aviation, and poison gases made an appearance in wars, and even a legendary cannon capable of launching a heavy projectile more than 100 kilometers made its presence felt in the bloody conflict. From that carnage emerged the League of Nations, an institution that should have preserved peace but which did not even manage to stop the rapid advance of colonialism in Africa, a great part of Asia, Oceania, the Caribbean, Canada, and a contemptuous neocolonialism in Latin America. Barely 20 years later, another atrocious world war broke out in Europe, the preamble to which was the Spanish Civil War, beginning in 1936. After the crushing defeat of the Nazis, world nations placed their hopes in the United Nations, which strives to generate cooperation in order to put an end to aggressions and wars, such that countries can preserve the peace, development, and peaceful cooperation of the big and small, rich or poor states of the world. Millions of scientists could, among other tasks, increase the chances of the survival of the human species, with billions of people already threatened by food and water shortages within a short period of time. We are already 7.3 billion people on the planet. In 1800, there were only 978 million. This figure rose to 6.7 billion in 2000, and according to conservative estimates, by the year 2050, there will be 10 billion. Of course, scarcely is the arrival to Western Europe of boats full of migrants mentioned. Traveling in any object that floats, a river of African migrants from the continent colonized by the Europeans over hundreds of years. 23 years ago, a United Nations conference on the environment and development stated... 23 years ago, in a United Nations conference on the environment and development, I stated, an important biological species is in danger of disappearing, given the rapid and progressive destruction of its natural life-sustaining conditions. That species is man. I did not know at that time how close we were to this. In commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the Great Patriotic War, I wish to put on record our profound admiration for the heroic Soviet people who provided humankind an enormous service. Today, we are seeing the solid alliance between the people of the Russian Federation and the state with the fastest growing economy in the world, the People's Republic of China. Both countries, with their close cooperation, modern science, and powerful armies and brave soldiers, constitute a powerful shield of world peace and security, so that the life of our species may be preserved. Physical and mental health and the spirit of solidarity are norms which must prevail, or the future of humankind as we know it will be lost forever. The 27 million Soviets who died in the Great Patriotic War also did so for humanity and the right to think and be socialists, to be Marxist-Leninists, communists, and leave the Dark Ages behind. That's Fidel Castro, writing on the 70th anniversary of the defeat of Nazi Germany. And that's very important stuff to understand. Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM in Guelph. That was Victor Jara with El Derecho de Vivir en Paz. That was a song that he wrote in solidarity with the Vietnamese people who were resisting, of course, the American war machine in the Vietnam War. And as I said in the beginning of this show, international solidarity is absolutely crucial, indispensable in opposing imperialist war, wherever that may be, whether that was in the Second World War, of course, many allies came together to defeat Nazi Germany, or whether that's in the Vietnam War, or whether that's today, where the resistance against war, trying to stop wars occurring in the Middle East, stop the expansion of war, preventing, as happened a few years ago, America threatened to go into Syria with ground troops, you know, actually attack Syria, you know, invade and engage in regime change the same way that they did in Iraq. But they were stopped by the resistance of the American people and by people around the world who clearly did not support that. And it was politically too costly, so they were forced to back down. You know, just like it was with Vietnam, you know, people in the United States itself rose up, stood in solidarity with the people of Vietnam and people in other countries, and made that war too politically costly for America to continue with it. In all these circumstances, international solidarity, people working together across frontiers, that's what gets the job done. That's what stops the war machine. That's what saves lives. That's what saves countries from destruction. And that's what has to continue. And that's also what makes revolutions possible. That's also what makes popular victories possible. People working together across frontiers, reinforcing each other, backing each other up, working together, sharing resources. That's what contributes to the victories of working class struggles, like anti-colonial struggles, you name it. Struggles of indigenous people for self-determination. All these things require a great coming together. You know, and this is absolutely crucial. You know, and that's what internationalism is all about. Now, I want to read an excerpt from a book called Russia's Heroes, True Stories of the Soviet Patriots Who Defied Hitler. This particular chapter is called The High Cost of Victory, because it's not often understood the sacrifice that was made by the Soviet Union to defeat Nazi Germany. It's not widely understood in places like Canada or the United States or in most Western countries. It's not taught in school. And we're left with false impressions about how the Second World War was won and the people who fought and died to make sure that Nazi Germany was brought to an end. So this is what the author of this book, Albert Axel, was saying about this. The Russian march to Berlin had been arduous. There was fierce fighting for 1,418 days and nights along a front stretching from 1,800 to 3,700 miles. When victory came after 4 years, the toll had been high. One life for every 5 seconds of the war, 13 lives for every minute, 791 lives every hour, 1,900 daily. 19,000 daily, I should say. In human terms, every family lost one or more members, or close relatives, or friends in the Soviet Union. The final major engagement on the Eastern Front, the storming of Berlin, began in the last days of April 1945. The Germans had fortified the city in advance, building 3 defense lines around it. Some of the 400 formidable reinforced concrete gun emplacements, pillboxes, and bunkers reached a depth of 60 feet. Such a stronghold could house a whole regiment. All told, Berlin was defended by over 300,000 troops, including SS, Volkssturm, members of the Hitlerjugend, in addition to 32,000 police. The Nazis did everything to prevent defeat. The Berlin operation alone cost the Red Army 300,000 killed and wounded. There was a realistic maxim about Russian longevity on the Eastern Front. It's said that a lieutenant and a platoon leader survived, on average, one attack and a half. A tank man, one battle and a half. A pilot, 1.5 combat missions. Of course, nobody could tell when their luck would run out. Some soldiers fought the entire war in a reconnaissance unit, stepped on a booby trap, but lost only the heel of their boot. While others were blasted in a dive bombing attack en route to the front. But fairly accurate data has been compiled on battle losses, and though there may be discrepancies, a few conclusions may be drawn. 1 out of 3 Russian officers did not come home from the war. That is about 1 million officers, or some 35% of all the officers in the armed forces. This isn't even enlisted men, this is officers, died. Every 2 weeks, a platoon commander had to be replaced due to death or wounds. The mortality of general officers was high. Among the well-known generals to fall in action were Dovator, Batutin, and Chernyakhovsky. About 150 Russian generals died at the front. Hundreds more were wounded or suffered concussion. Losses among the Russian ranks were heavier. Although they made up approximately 65% of the total army strength, they accounted for almost 75% of all casualties. The picture is especially grim for tank men and pilots. At the start of 1942, the army had about 8,000 tanks left intact. That year, some 30,000 new tanks reached the front, and of these, 15,000 were destroyed in combat. In the entire war, about 43,000 Russian planes were shot down, and 36,000 pilots did not return from their missions. Except for a few thousand, the majority of pilots were lost with their aircraft. In 1942, more than 5,000 airmen died, or 1 in every 4. And the 1943 losses were higher. Almost every other pilot was lost, or approximately 40% of the total. Various post-Soviet studies of Russian military losses have been compiled, including a notably grim study supervised by Colonel General Grigory Krivosheyev. The grim statistics show that more than 11 million servicemen lost their lives during the war, including some 7 million killed in action or died of their wounds or were reported missing, and about 4 million who died in POW camps. Those wounded, shell-shocked, frostbitten, or suffering from burns or illness numbered above 15 million. It has been said that the Germans were overwhelmed by Russian cadavers. The Germans themselves lost approximately 8 million officers and men on the Eastern Front, out of total losses of 13,448,000. From these figures, it appears that the Russians lost 30% more men than the Germans, and this greater loss occurred mainly in 1941. According to Professor John Erickson of Edinburgh University, who is one of the world's leading experts on Russian military affairs, Hitler's invasion accounted for not 25 to 27 million soldiers and civilians dead, but over 40 million. Erickson calculates that the drastic fall in Russia's birth rate at war's end, resulting in population loss, was a direct consequence of the invasion and should therefore be added to the overall toll of the war. Belarus suffered exceptionally in this respect. Of 270 cities and towns in Belarus, over 200 were destroyed, many of them burned to the ground. Over 9,000 villages were razed. In addition to this destruction of thousands of factories, farms, schools, libraries, theaters, and hospitals, nearly all electrical power plants were destroyed and over 400,000 farmhouses demolished. That's just in Belarus alone. So the toll on what has been called the Eastern Front in the Second World War, that which does not adequately get taught in our education system, was probably the death toll, and the scale of destruction is almost beyond human comprehension. You know, and in this part of the world, we don't understand. You know, at least a lot of the people who were with me when I was on the trip I took to Moscow in 2008, when I spent a semester abroad there in that year, A lot of them didn't understand. A lot of the foreigners didn't understand why the Russian people are so respectful to their veterans. And why they're so reverential on that day, May 9th. You know, the day that Nazi Germany was defeated. Why they're so reverential of the sacrifice made by their soldiers and by the people of the Soviet Union in general. And why they go to such lengths to commemorate that sacrifice. You know, they don't really know. You know, these people who go to Russia from the West, they don't really understand the scale of destruction that happened. Because, of course, what Hitler's aim was when he invaded the Soviet Union was basically total destruction. He wanted to depopulate the Soviet Union, slaughter its people or enslave them, and make room for Lebensraum, you know, living space in the East, that would then be colonized by German and Western European settlers. Effectively, he wanted to do to the Soviet Union what the colonizers of North America did to the indigenous people here. He basically wanted to wipe out all the people and then colonize the land. I think that puts a few things in perspective. And maybe that's one of the reasons why the Canadian government and the American government doesn't really want to talk about this sort of thing because, well, this is what happened here. This is what happened to the indigenous people on this land. You know, what Hitler did to the Russians and the Ukrainians and the Belarusians and all the peoples of the Soviet Union is what the colonizers, the European colonizers who came to North America did to the indigenous people here. Tried to exterminate them. Maybe that hits a little close to home for the government of Canada. And maybe that's another reason why they're not in Red Square commemorating Victory Day. On this day, May 9th, maybe that's one of the reasons why they're not there. And why they choose to ignore all of this. And there's one more thing I really want to speak with this regard to this, but I'll leave it until after this particular song by Vladimir Vysotsky. This is called The Fallen Soldier. And I want to dedicate this song to all the people who gave their lives in the struggle against fascism and continue to give their lives today. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Мне кажется порою, что солдат с кровавых не пришедшие полей не в землю нашу полегли когда-то, а превратились в белых журавлей. Они до сей поры с времен тех дальних летят и подают нам голоса. Не потому так часто и печально мы замолкаем, глядя в небеса. Mm-hmm. летит по небу Клим усталый. Летит в тумане на исходе дня, и в том строю есть промежуток мало. Быть может, это место для меня. Настанет день журавлиной стаи, я поплыву в такой же сизой мгле. Из-под небес по птичьи окликая всех вас, кого оставил на земле. Мне кажется порою, что солдат с кровавых не пришедшие полей не в землю нашу полегли когда-то, а превратились в белых журавлей.
Back in the USSR, we'll be back after this short break.
On Thursday, June 11th, join Wellington Water Watchers for an evening event of the Two Rivers Festival called Growing the Greenbelt, a town hall meeting at the University of Guelph's Arboretum Auditorium. This event will feature discussions on the benefits of expanding our greenbelt, as well as how inappropriate development can put our nature, drinking water, farmlands, and climate at risk. Speakers will include environmental lawyer David Donnelly, Director General of the David Suzuki Foundation Faisal Mulla, and retired University of Guelph professor Hugh Whiteley. That's Growing the Greenbelt, Thursday, June 11, at the University of Guelph's Arboretum Auditorium. Doors open at 6 p.m., and the event will run until 9. This is a physically accessible location. Registration is free. Please contact Wellington Water Watchers at gmail.com or tworiversfest@gmail.com. That's tworiversfest@gmail.com for details.
Hello, CFRU aficionados.
I'm Danica.
I am Alyssa, and we're the co-hosts of The Secret Ingredient.
You can catch us every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m.
We listen to music and we talk about the invisible elements of art, such as the co-creation of work across disciplines and community building.
We hope you'll join us in our ongoing quest for The Secret Ingredient in art every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m.
Este verano, el Festival de Música Internacional Kultrun se llevará a cabo del 9 al 12 de julio en Kitchener, conciertos y eventos gratis el fin de semana. El festival es el único de la región que celebra la diversidad. Este año se llevará en conjunto con los Juegos Panamericanos. Artistas invitados: Ana Tijoux, Chico Trujillo, Los Bambam, Lucho Quesana y muchos más. También habrá actividades interactivas para todas las edades, talleres, cuentacuentos, teatro, comida y artesanías. Venga, salude al equipo de CFRU que estará transmitiendo en vivo. Este año el festival estará ubicado en Campos Verdes del Parque Victoria. Este lugar es accesible. Para más información visite la página nerudaarts.ca. Reserve la fecha, julio, del 9 al 12 en Kitchener, Waterloo. Ahí nos vemos.
Okay, you're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. What we played before the break was Vladimir Vysotsky. He's very... unfortunately, he doesn't really get a lot of recognition in the West, but he's definitely one of the most well-known singers, like kind of folk singers in Russia. Fortunately, no, he's no longer alive, but he was almost had the status of, like, say, a Bob Dylan, you know, would have had in Russia. And that was his song, The Fallen Soldier, once again commemorating the fallen, those who fell to defeat fascism in the Second World War. And there actually is a video that goes with that, and it's like it's almost making me a bit emotional recalling that, because more or less what the video, I believe it was part of a movie. I don't know all the details of it, but I mean, what I remember about the part of the movie where this song is playing is, yeah, this soldier, this young man, is dying. Like he's been shot. He's lying on the floor of on the forest floor, in a woods. I can't remember if he's a partisan or if he's a regular army soldier in the Red Army, but he's dying. He knows like nobody is going to reach him in time to save him. And all these thoughts are revolving through his mind about, like, you know, his family, about the woman he loves, all these people he will never see again, and all the things he will never get to do. He will never get to tell them. He will never, you know, get to ask them, you know, all these kind of things. And it's just like one of the most moving and most powerful, like, scenes in a movie that I think I've ever seen. You know, the movie itself, I think, was put out in the 1960s. It's like a Soviet-era movie that virtually no one in the West has ever seen. And that's the thing. On this show, a lot of the stuff, like, I talk about is stuff that music or stuff in movies that people in the West are just not familiar with. Like, unless you deliberately go out of your way to find this stuff, like, online or something, like a person like me does, it's very, very hard to get this and to understand this and to, like, you know, really grasp what this is all about, you know. But once again, this is a part of internationalism. Like, you know, you have to find out about other people and other cultures and, like, you know, what it is that is important to them. Understand their humanity, you know, understand, like, who they are. And make the connections. Stand in solidarity with them. You know, all this stuff is very important. And, like, you know, it's going to be very difficult for me to read this next passage, but I feel like it's very essential that I do so, once again, to emphasize to you just what, you know, what the reality was. You know, the pain that and the misery that was inflicted by German imperialism on the peoples of the Soviet Union in from 1941 to 1945. You know, it's of course, I think, quite well known that the majority of Jews who died in the Holocaust came from Eastern Europe. Many of them came from the territories of the Soviet Union. You know, after the Germans invaded, they were rounded up and killed. And the extermination of Jews continued to the end. In Kluga, Estonia, for example, the war correspondent Alexander Wirth saw the charred remains of some 2,000 Jews recently shot and burned on bonfires. And the kind of atrocities that the Germans committed against ordinary Russian civilians, you know, and Ukrainian civilians, Belarusian civilians, like, you know, all the different peoples that they conquered when they invaded the Soviet Union, also has to be remembered. There's one Russian soldier who recalled a bitter day when his regiment surrounded some Germans near Perichi, which is a village south of Bobrusk in what is now Belarus. And he says, "The enemy put up a desperate resistance, but we pushed them into a pocket and went at them with our Katyushas, you know, our rocket launchers. That was when a farm woman came running to our forward line. Tears streaming down her face, she said, 'Sons, come see what those monsters have done. You know, come see what those monsters have done.' And we went. In the village, by a house that had served the Nazis as a field hospital, she showed us a pit that had been covered over by soil. That soil still breathed. We shoveled it away, and the sight of what was beneath filled us with horror. The pit was full of the bodies of little boys and girls between 10 and 12 years. We learned that the Nazi butchers had used them to give blood transfusions to their wounded officers and then had thrown them into the pit. I sincerely wish that no one ever feels what we did at that moment. You know, that's the kind of atrocities that the Nazis perpetrated in Russia, in the Soviet Union. That's the kind of atrocities they perpetrated. That's what imperialism does. When I talk about imperialism on this show and what it does to human beings, like, that example pretty much sums up the kind of the horrific extremes they can go to. You know, imperialism commits those atrocities against people and also produces monsters who will commit those atrocities to people against people. Because those German troops who carried out those massacres, they were indoctrinated to see the peoples of the Soviet Union as subhuman. So you could even kill, you know, these little children if you needed blood donations, basically blood for your wounded officers. You could kill them and take their blood. Yeah, when that happened, that actually happened. You know, when we think about that, we think about the atrocities that the Americans committed in Vietnam, like the My Lai Massacre, which is one amongst many, 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 many villages that were destroyed, their people murdered. You know, the captives who were thrown out of helicopters, who had their ears sawn off or their heads blown off with detonation cord or what have you. You know, this is these are the atrocities that imperialism produces. You know, we could take that to Iraq and the kind of atrocities committed there, like at Abu Ghraib and like a million other places in the Iraq War that the Americans perpetrated against the Iraqi people. All these things. These are things very few people can look in the face. You know, they're so horrible. But this is ultimately what we have to do. And we have to understand what we're up against. And how horrific it is, and like how important it is that we defeat this monstrosity that is imperialism. And, you know, we put it down. We break it. And we liberate the peoples of the world from it. It's like, once you understand, I think, what imperialism really is all about, like, it's, you know, not just a word, like, what it's actually is, you know, once you understand it, like, you will never see the world in the same way again. You won't be able to bury your head in the sand like you did before. And when Indigenous peoples in Canada, like, stand up and talk about how they have suffered, you cannot ignore them. Or peoples around the world who are suffering from imperialism. You will not be able to ignore them. Because you'll know what imperialism actually is, how evil it is, and how it has to be defeated. And that we all have a part to play in its defeat. This is very, very, very crucial to understand. Now, what I want to play right now is a song which I think, even though it's not really about Russia or Vietnam or any of these kind of things which I've been talking about, it really kind of puts in perspective what it is we're up against and like what it is we're fighting for. And I think it's a particularly poignant because this comes from the land where a lot of my own ancestors came from, that is England. You know, in England, of course, you know, that's the heartland of the British Empire. It's from there that, you know, the British Empire ruled most of the world for 300 years by the barrel of a gun and committed unspeakable crimes and exploitation against countless peoples. But even there, it faced resistance. Even there, imperialism faced resistance. Even there, exploitation faced resistance. And that's what this song's all about. This song's called The World Turned Upside Down.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. Diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was The World Turned Upside Down by Billy Bragg. And once again, you notice, just like I said, that is really what it... That song really encapsulates what it is we're fighting for and what we're fighting against. You know, we're fighting against that system that, of course, you know, exploits people, drives people from the land, you know, takes the land, you know, it builds walls between people, conquers and enslaves people, and kills and exterminates them and brutalizes them when they fight back. That's what we're up against all around the world. You know, we're part of the same struggle, wherever we may be. And this is very important to understand. This is immensely important to understand. So I'm going to end this part of the show off with a song, which is quite a bit different from the one before. This is a song by Sabaton. It's a Swedish band, and this is called Arturo Dominatus, and this is about the fall of Berlin and the defeat of Nazism. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.